Do you ever feel like the people you're crazy attracted to aren't really ever available? Or if they're available, they're just not that good for you? Or that the people who are good and decent and available just seem kind of a little boring? Stay tuned to Deeper Dating to learn the real reasons why that happens and what you can do about it so you can find the kind of love that's exciting and has the legs to last and grow.
If you've ever been disillusioned, disappointed, or discouraged in your search for love, and you know there has to be a better way to find the healthy, soul-filling love you've always longed for, then you've discovered the podcast for you. I know, as Ken's work personally has led me to find the love of my life. So here's your host of Deeper Dating, Ken Page.
Have you ever felt like the people you're most attracted to aren't available or aren't good for you? And that the people who are available and are good for you are just not the ones you're attracted to? Welcome to the Deeper Dating Podcast. I'm Ken Page, and today we're going to tackle what might be the most common struggle of all in the world of dating. What to do? We can't force ourselves to be attracted to someone we're not attracted to. Just because that person is good for us, it doesn't work. And if we try, it's going to put us and our partner through hell. We can't force our sexual attractions. Most of us have learned that the hard way. But there's something profound that most of us have never been taught. Even though our sexual attractions cannot be forced and cannot be controlled, they can be educated. In this podcast, I'm going to share some ways to cultivate sexual and romantic attraction to people who are good for you and available. Even if you are relentlessly attracted to the bad boys and the bad girls or to unavailable people, you can still develop this capacity. And these are not gimmicks that I'm going to be teaching you. They are the lifelong skills of romance and intimacy. They're the very same skills you're going to use to keep passion alive in your next serious relationship. In my own life, and after working with thousands of people, I've learned that sexual and romantic attractions can change. Not quickly, but like if you picture a giant ship in the ocean needing to turn, that turn happens gradually, but it happens. Let's discover how that change can happen, because if you learn to educate your attractions, you'll be on the course to happy, fulfilling love. And these are lessons that we are not taught. So, we're going to begin by creating a kind of measuring stick for our attraction, sexual and romantic. And I call it the attraction spectrum. So every time you enter into a room full of people, you make choices based on your attractions. Who do you notice? Who do you pass over? There was a woman I knew, a young stockbroker from Chicago, whose name was Deb. And she said to me once, she said, "You know, it's just almost magical. I can go to a party and there's always one person I'm like most attracted to. And if I date him within a few weeks or a few months, I discover that he has the same attributes as the guy before him and the one before him. But when I first saw him as a complete stranger from across the room, I had no idea that that would be true." Our attractions are forged in the deep space of our being, and they're born of countless and often unknowable forces. When you encounter someone for the first time, your psyche and your heart begin an astonishingly complex scan. They begin to pick up obvious cues, like physique and facial structure, but they also register a huge amount of subtle cues, like body language, facial expression, the tightness or the looseness in the lips, the nuance of the voice, the muscles in the eyes, around the eyes, and what they tell us. You instantly process this information without even knowing it. All you feel is desire or the lack of it. This is amazing. Scientists tell us that a silkworm can smell one other silkworm moth of the opposite sex from 6.5 miles away. One moth, 6.5 miles away. Now, our mating instinct might not be quite that developed, but nature has programmed you with a romantic radar with astounding sensitivity to find just the right person to trigger whatever emotional circuitry gets you the most and most needs to be worked through. Every one of us is attracted to a kind of type of person that stops us dead in our tracks. A physical type, an emotional type, a personality type. So now, let's imagine that you have a spectrum of attraction from, let's say, 1 to 10. And the people who are around 1 just aren't physically or romantically attractive to you at all. But the people who are 9s and 10s are like icons. They're just compellingly attractive, and they leave you weak in the knees, and they trigger your longing, and very possibly they trigger your insecurity too. Well, Harville Hendrix, who's the founder of Imago Therapy and just a brilliant, brilliant theoretician, illuminates this phenomenon in a way that just sheds light on our entire intimacy journey. He teaches that these people are so attractive to us in part because they embody not only the best characteristics of our parents, but the worst ones as well. Think about this for a minute. It's breathtaking. The people you are the most crazy for, you are so in large part because they embody the worst emotional characteristics of your caregivers. Is that conscious? No. But all of us have unresolved childhood hurts due to betrayal, anger, manipulation, abuse, not being seen, being neglected. Unconsciously, we do seek healing through our partner, and we try to achieve that healing by bonding, get this, with someone we sense might hurt us in similar ways to how we were hurt as children. Not by acting out the same exact behaviors, but by doing things that make us feel the same way. We sense that, and somewhere deep inside, we begin to build a hope that we can convince this person to finally love us right and accept us fully. This is a wild blueprint, and it's something we need to know. Our conscious self is drawn to the positive qualities we yearn for, but your unconscious will draw you to the qualities that remind you of how you were wounded the most. This amazing insight partly explains a lot of things, but one is it explains why it might be that you get so awkward and insecure around people to whom you're wildly, wildly attracted. And it also explains why our greatest heartbreaks happen with these most intense, wild, fiery attractions. So some of us relate to that reality by only dating people on the low end of our attraction spectrum. We're just scared of the intensity. We don't want that painful loss again when we approach those people we're just crazy for. And often we feel safest with people who maybe don't do much for us physically or romantically or sexually, but they're comfortable and they're safe. And of course, the downside to that can be a lack of passion, boredom, and frustration. Others of us only date people on the high end of our attraction spectrum because they believe that that's where real love and passion lie. Because when you're in that state, it feels like total, pure, healthy, real, right attraction. It may not be, but it feels that way. So with someone who's a really high number on your attraction spectrum, you'll be able to tell that you're attracted in a fraction of a second. And that could be achingly exciting, but it's usually not going to be comfortable or secure. So as someone who has worked with so many people in this arena, I have come to see that people who only date on the high end of their attraction spectrum, and think if that might be you, are more likely to remain single. And people who only date on the lower end of the spectrum are much more likely to be coupled, but unhappy and unfulfilled. So I am not telling you to stay away from people who make you weak in the knees from day one. They might be your soulmate. And I'm not telling you to stay away from dating great people who you're not necessarily attracted to at first, because attractions can grow. But what I am saying is this: there's a sweet spot that you might not be focusing on. And if you do, it's going to make a huge difference in your journey. It's the middle of the attraction spectrum, where there is a spark, but not necessarily a tsunami. So take a minute to think. It's a great question for you to reflect on if you want to create a conscious journey to love. What is your pattern? Where on the attraction spectrum do you tend to focus? So I want to talk a little bit about this sweet spot that I mentioned, which is focusing on people where there is a spark, who are somewhat more around the middle of your spectrum. They're fours, they're fives, they're sixes, they're sevens. So with those folks, it usually takes a little bit more time to get a sense of how interested you really are. That is why we court. That is why we date. I had a mentor. His name was John McNeil. And he taught me a lot about love. And I was dating someone at the time. And it was someone who was a really nice guy. But I wasn't crazy about him. And there were no real wild sparks, but I found him attractive. And I said to John, I don't know if I should go on a third date with him. I don't know if it's worth it. And John said to me, if you're not sure and there are no red flags, go on the third date. Go on the fourth date if you need to. Here's what happens. Over a little bit of time, he's either going to become more beautiful to you, or he's not, and then you'll know that. And I thought that was beautiful and wise advice. People who are willing to date in the mid-range are more likely to find real and lasting love. And you know, it's not a matter of selling out, because immediate attraction is not the best forecaster of future passion. Intense immediate attractions can blind you to the actual quality of your interactions with someone, and then you get blindsided. Because if you're blinded to someone's actual character, you're in grave risk. So attractions can grow, and many of us have had the experience of becoming more attracted to someone as we get to know them more and better. Have you ever had that experience? You might want to reflect on that. Now, once again, I am not telling you date people that you're not attracted to because they're good for you. That will never work. And you have the right to a wonderful, sexual, passionate relationship. What I am saying is, don't just think love lies in the places where you instantly feel like you're falling in love. So, okay, let's follow this through. What do you do when you meet someone who inspires you and you do feel a spark of attraction, but not enough where you feel like, I know I could fall in love with this person? Well, sexual attraction is much more mutable than we've been taught. We all have types that turn us on wildly, immediately, intensely. But as I said, attractions can grow. It's really unlikely that you're going to end up attracted to somebody who's completely not physically appealing to you. But if someone holds a spark for you of attraction and has other qualities you love, your attraction absolutely can blossom. So the next time in your dating life that you meet someone for the first time, don't make a snap decision based on whether you're instantly attracted to them on a physical level. It's not a valid thing to think that someone is only right for you if you know that given the opportunity, you would be open to sleeping with them really soon, even if you choose not to, because you know it's not the best thing to do. If you're not sure, go out with that person again. And remember that in time, something lovely might happen. He or she might actually become more beautiful to you. And if not, you will know that it's time to stop dating them. If you've ever seen an artist working on a portrait, you'll notice that oftentimes they'll squint as they work. Because squinting, I asked an artist about this once, and she said to me, "I squint because it helps me focus on the essence of my subject, and it doesn't distract me by their harsh outlines." We need to do that in our dating life. It's so easy to get lost in that hard and rigid and instant assessment of someone's imperfections, but it serves us better to simply sense their spirit and notice and taste the connection with them. And if it's a good one and you keep noticing it and riding with it, that is what makes attractions grow. As we start caring more deeply about someone, invisible tendrils begin to grow in our thinking, in our sexual imaginings and longings, and in our growing sense of dependence on this person. Our sexuality and our hearts begin to create attachment to that person and to make him our own or her our own. So when we build a muscle through exercise, our bodies need to create new capillaries to feed it. When we create new love, something similar happens. New neural pathways and emotional pathways, new rituals, new sense memories, new appreciations of sense and touch and sexual activities and emotional need get created. An entire web of new connections gets created inside of us as our hearts allow this one stranger to become our loved one. So we become specialized in them in so many ways. And that's why breakups can hurt with real physical pain, because these lovingly built tendrils are just ripped out. That's an experience of anguish. But the point that I'd like you to consider is this. When you choose someone whose character is truly solid, who is good and decent and able to manage their lives, who really cares about you and with whom your soul feels safe, you are decreasing the chances of that horrible pain occurring for you. Remember that in the end, it really does come down to character. I speak about this more in other podcasts, but in a very binary way, there are two kind of circuitries of attraction that we have. There are attractions, what I call attractions of inspiration. That's where we get attracted to someone because of their goodness, their decency, their creativity, their solidity, the way they live in the world, the way they curate their lives, and their stability and their availability. And those are a different kind of circuitry. It grows slower. It roots down deeper. It brings much, much, much more joy. And it's the rock upon which you want to build love in your life. There are also attractions of deprivation, and they're sexy and hot as hell. And those are attractions where somebody almost loves you right and is almost ready to commit and almost doesn't neglect you, but they keep reverting back to that. And these people can be our types for the reasons I talked about before. And it could feel like real love, and God knows those attractions of deprivation just grab at us and pull at us. But once we know the distinction between the two, and we reach a point where we make a choice to only choose attractions of inspiration, our world changes. But in those attractions of inspiration, it could take time for your attraction to build. And at those times, it could be difficult to resist the impulse to flee in search of something where you know you're instantly turned on right away. So as a result of that, many, many, many potential wonderful relationships are cut off before they're even given a chance to grow. So let's talk about this now. Let's talk about what you do when you meet someone who is like an attraction of inspiration for you, and there's some attraction, but maybe not full-on attraction yet. Well, here's a piece of instruction that will make a real difference with that. The more you focus on the things that trigger your desire and your connection with that person, the more your attraction can build. So if you're attracted to someone in the way I just described, the first step is to give yourself space, to recognize that no matter how wonderful this person, you are not obligated to be one drop more attracted to him or her than you are. Forcing your feelings is only going to block the natural flow of attraction. Pressure and demand is death to new eros. Well, maybe not death, but it's kind of kryptonite. So instead, what I would encourage you to do is allow yourself to reflect on what attracts you to them, what turns you on, and what you appreciate. And when you do that, you'll be building these new pathways of attraction and connection. So when you do that, think emotionally. Think about how he is with his dog. Think about how she is in her career. Think about how he or she laughs and how good that sounds and makes you feel and how it makes you laugh. And think sexually too. Take time to let your fantasies unfurl. Now maybe the fantasy that you have is just simply, it would be nice to kiss. Or I'd love to hold hands at the movie, that would be so nice. Or just gently to touch. Or maybe your fantasies are more sexual. Maybe they're long, lazy sex, or quick, hot sex, or kinky sex, or tender sex. Allow yourself to honor whatever you're imagining in your own head. And as appropriate, and I'll talk about that in about 1 second, see if you can ask for what you want if the relationship develops, because that's how we grow passion, and to listen to the same from our partners. But here's my advice around this question of when to have sex. When we desire someone and postpone the sex for at least 4 or 5 dates, we develop surprising new pathways of attraction. It's a great way to grow passion. And more important, having sex too early is like miracle grow for fear of intimacy. It makes us want to flee, or it makes us want to cling and grab. Neither of those things are good in early relationships. So go slowly on the outside, but inside, allow yourself free rein in your fantasy life. And if your desire is more sensual than sexual, that is fine too. I know someone who met a guy who lived in Europe, and she knew she liked him, but she wasn't attracted enough to want sex. She just wanted to cuddle with him. And he invited her to visit, and she didn't know if she should make the trip. And she was speaking to a friend of hers, and she said, "I don't know if I should go all the way to Europe just to cuddle with someone." And her very wise friend said, "Really? I can't think of a better reason to go to Europe." And my friend took the trip, and over time she fell deeply in love, and she was wise enough to take all the time she needed with this guy, and he was wise enough to let her. So, you know, the research shows that it's so much less about the person you think is your exact iconic type, and it's so much more about the chemistry. What I'm teaching here are tools that most of us are never taught. They're the tools about how to grow attraction. They're the deeper skills of intimacy. I know I spent decades chasing people who didn't want me, who I ultimately couldn't end up being with because maybe I didn't respect them enough, but some internal bell was ringing and saying, "This is what attraction is." Thank God I learned better. There's a greater journey. And as you learn this approach, you'll find that the pain of dating and the ugliness and the disappointment that we can experience in dating diminish. You'll feel a growing sense of wisdom and sanity in this crazy-making world of dating when you practice these things, and you'll feel more of a sense of hope. But most importantly, you will see real life changes in your search for love. You will find your attraction growing for the right people. You will over time lose your taste for people who chip away at your sense of self-worth. And you'll find yourself more and more likely to meet people like that, to find them interested in you, and to be interested in them back. It's amazing how that happens, but that's the wiser path to understanding our attractions. Thanks so much. and have a great day.
And that's it for today's episode of Deeper Dating. Be sure to go to deeperdatingpodcast.com as Ken has a few more gifts for you. Then join us on the next episode.